morning, and thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Climate Conference. Your lines are in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer session of today's conference. At that time, you may press star followed by the number one to ask a question. Please unmute your phones and state your name when prompted. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. It is now my pleasure to turn the call over to Mr. John Bateman. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you, Michelle. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining this monthly climate update call, part of the suite of climate services that NOAA provides to government, business, academia, and the public to support informed decision-making. I'm John Bateman with NOAA Communications, and I'll be facilitating the call today. If you have any additional questions after the conclusion of today's call, my colleague John Leslie and I can both be reached by email at, and I will spell it, nesdis.pa@noaa.gov. And that's nesdis.pa@noaa.gov. Today's update will feature two short presentations, followed by an operator-assisted question and answer session. A copy of the presentation our speakers will follow can be downloaded from the link in the media advisory. And with that, I want to introduce our speakers. The first speaker is Ira Sanchez Lugo, a climatologist with NOAA's National Centers for Environmental Information, who will provide a summary of the August and June through August 2022 U.S. and Global Climate Report, as well as the latest drought monitor update. And our second presenter is Scott Handel, a meteorologist at NOAA's Climate Prediction Center, who will provide the latest El Niño-La Niña update, as well as the U.S. temperature, precipitation, and drought outlook for October, November, and December. Our first speaker will be Ira from NOAA NCEI.
Thank you, John, and thanks to everyone who joined in today. I'm going to go ahead and start on slide two to look at the global temperatures for the month of August. So during the month of August, we saw warmer than average conditions across much of the world's land and ocean surfaces. Record warm August temperatures were present across parts of Western North America, Western and Southern Asia, Europe, and the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. Cooler than average conditions were present across parts of the North Atlantic, specifically south of Greenland, Central Asia, and across parts of Central and Eastern Tropical Pacific Ocean. However, no land or ocean areas had a record cold August temperature. Averaged as a whole, this was the sixth warmest August on record at 0.90 degrees Celsius or 1.62 degrees Fahrenheit above average. And the Northern Hemisphere as a whole had an August temperature that tied with 2020 as the highest for the month of August on record. Regionally, North America and Europe had their warmest August on record, while Asia had its fourth warmest on record. The month of August marks the end of the meteorological summer for the Northern Hemisphere and winter for the Southern Hemisphere. During this three-month period, we saw that warmer than average temperatures were present across much of the globe, with record warm June through August temperatures across parts of Europe, Asia, Northern North America, and the Pacific Ocean. Cooler than average temperatures were limited to parts of the Central and Eastern Pacific Ocean and in small areas in Central and Southern Asia. However, once again, no land or ocean areas had a record cold June through August period. As a whole, the June through August temperature for the globe tied with 2015 and 2017 as the fifth highest such period on record. The Northern Hemisphere summer was the second warmest summer since global records extend back to 1880, and only the summer of 2020 was warmer. Meanwhile, the Southern Hemisphere had its 10th warmest winter on record. Regionally, Europe had its warmest summer on record, according to our data records, while North America and Asia had their second warmest June through April period. Moving now to slide number three to look at the year-to-date temperatures for the globe. The global surface temperature for the first 8 months of the year was also the sixth highest on record at 0.86 degrees Celsius or 1.55 degrees Fahrenheit above average. And during this year-to-date period, much warmer than average conditions were present across much of the globe, with record high temperatures across parts of Europe, Asia, and the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans. Cooler than average temperatures were present across parts of the central and eastern tropical Pacific, as well as the southeastern Pacific Ocean. However, no land or ocean areas had a record cold January through August period. Europe had its second warmest January through August period behind the record that was set in 2020, and Asia had its third warmest such period, while Oceania had its ninth warmest on record. South America and Africa did have an above average year-to-date temperature. However, this was their coolest such period since 2011 and 2012, respectively. And according to a statistical analysis, the year is very likely to rank among the 10 warmest years on record, but only has less than 11% chance to rank among the 5 warmest years on record. Moving now to slide number 4 to look at the U.S. So during the month of August, much of the contiguous U.S. had above average temperatures. There were 8 states across the Northwest and the Northeast that had a record warm August. There were several other states across these regions that had a top 5 warm August, and this was mainly due to a high-pressure system that was near the west and the northeast that was helped bring warm temperatures to the region. However, no state had a statewide average temperature that was below average during the month of August. Average as a whole, the contiguous U.S. had an August temperature of 74.6 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 2.5 degrees Fahrenheit above average, and this was the 8th warmest August for the nation. And the national data records extend back to 1895. In terms of precipitation, the nation's August precipitation total was 3.04 inches, which is 0.42 inch above average, and this tied as the 19th wettest August on record. As you can see from the map, precipitation was above average across parts of the West, the Midwest, the Southern Mississippi Valley, and the Plains. The state of Mississippi had its wettest August on record, while Nevada and Louisiana had their third wettest on record. And the very wet conditions across this region were mainly due to a strong cold front that helped bring heavy rain from Texas, to Mississippi during the month. Meanwhile, drier than average conditions were observed across parts of the central and northern plains, the northwest, and parts of the northern Atlantic coastline. The state of Nebraska had a near record dry August, while Kansas had its 7th driest August on record. Moving now to slide number 5 to look at the summer conditions across the U.S. The summer temperature for the contiguous U.S. was 73.9 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 2.5 degrees Fahrenheit above average, and this was the nation's third warmest summer on record. This was only 0.08 degrees Fahrenheit cooler than the record summer that took place first in 1936 and then tied in the summer of 2021. Only one state had a statewide average temperature that was near average. All the other states had an above average summer temperature. However, no state had a record warm summer temperature. There were about 20 states that had a top 10 warmest summer on record, with Texas, Massachusetts, and Rhode Island having a near record warm summer. In terms of precipitation, it was wetter than average across parts of the West Coast, the Southwest, Midwest, the lower Mississippi Valley, and the state of Maine, while drier than average conditions were present across the Great Plains and the parts of the Eastern Coast. There were several states that had a top 10 wet or dry summer, but no state had a record wet or record dry summer. Averaged as a whole, the U.S. had a summer precipitation total of 8.18 inches, which is 0.14 inch below average, and it's ranked in the middle third of the summer record. Moving now to slide number 6, looking at drought across the contiguous U.S. This map was released today. So as of today, about 45% of the contiguous U.S. was in some type of drought. This is about 4 percentage points less than a month ago. Regionally, about 71% of the western U.S., 48% of the south, and about 52% of the high plains were in some type of drought. Compared to about a month ago, drought deteriorated across parts of the northwest and the high plains and small areas across the Midwest, the Northeast, and the Mid-Atlantic region. While drought improved across parts of the South, especially across much of Texas due to the recent rains that they've received. Outside of the contiguous U.S., Hawaii continued to be entrenched in moderate to extreme drought. Meanwhile, beneficial rains fell across parts of Puerto Rico, which helped bring, which helped lead to some drought improvement in the region. That is all that I have for today. I will now turn it over to Scott Handel.
Thank you, and good morning, everybody. This is Scott Handel, meteorologist from the National Weather Service Climate Prediction Center. I'm going to start off by bringing your attention to slide 7 of the presentation with the current observations and forecasts of the El Nino Southern Oscillation. The figure on the left shows the current sea surface temperature anomalies in the tropical Pacific. The blue shading represents areas where sea surface temperatures are below normal, and the orange and red areas correspond to areas where sea surface temperatures are above normal. As you can see, there's lots of blue near the center of the map, indicating that, on average, sea surface temperatures are currently below normal near the equator. Sea surface temperatures in what is called the Niño 3.4 region of the tropical Pacific are roughly 1 degree below Celsius below normal, which puts us firmly in La Niña territory, which starts when sea surface temperatures fall to half a degree Celsius below normal. Looking to the future, a continuation of La Niña is the most likely scenario as we head into the winter. The chart on the right indicates that there is around a 90% chance of La Niña this fall and a greater than 50% chance through the winter. Thereafter, a transition to the neutral phase of the El Niño Southern Oscillation is the most likely outcome as we progress through next spring. Now, moving from the tropics to closer to home, I'd like to draw your attention to slide eight, which represents our monthly outlooks for the month of October. These outlooks represent the probabilities of the mean temperature or total precipitation for the month will be below normal or below near or above normal. The red and orange shading on the map to the left indicates areas where above normal temperatures are the most likely outcome, while the blue shading indicates areas where below normal temperatures are more likely. Looking at the map on the left, the first thing that stands out is that there's a lot of red and orange on the map, indicating that most of the country is favored to have warmer than normal temperatures in October. This is especially true for the central Rockies through the central plains and into the middle Mississippi Valley, where there's greater than a 50% chance of above normal temperatures. This anticipated warmth is due to a variety of factors, such as La Niña impacts, model guidance, trends, and influences from the Madden-Julian oscillation. On the flip side, parts of South Central Alaska are favored to have below normal temperatures, where the ongoing La Niña tends to have the opposite impact. Looking at precipitation, the areas of green on the map on the right indicate regions where the total precipitation is favored to be above normal for October, and the brown areas represent regions where below normal precipitation is the most likely scenario. Below normal monthly total precipitation amounts are favored from north central California eastward across the central Rockies to the central and southern plains and parts of the central Mississippi and Ohio valleys. The La Niña base state, dynamical model guidance, and long-term trends contribute to this outlook. A slight tilt toward above normal precipitation is shown for parts of Washington and the Alaska Panhandle associated with model guidance and potential La Niña impacts. Probabilities in all locations are modest due to low predictability common during this time of year. Looking further ahead to the three-month period from October, November, and December, I'd like to bring your attention to slide 9. During this period, the potential impacts from La Niña become more apparent, with generally warmer and drier than normal weather favored across the southern part of the country and the wet patterns favored for the northwest. Increased chances for warmer than normal conditions extend north across the eastern contiguous United States, consistent with recent trends. Guidance has generally trended colder across much of Alaska and the northern contiguous United States, but colder than normal conditions are the most likely outcome across southeastern Alaska, and probabilities of above normal temperatures are relatively low for the northwest and northern plains compared to the rest of the contiguous United States. Despite the trend toward a colder solution, model guidance continues to favor milder than normal conditions for northwestern parts of Alaska. Above normal precipitation favor for the southwestern mainland through model guidance and potential La Niña influences. Wrapping things up with the drought outlook, I'd like to bring your attention to slide 10. The brown areas on the map indicate where drought is currently ongoing and expected to continue. This includes much of the southwestern United States, eastward across the southern and central plains, and northward to the northern high plains. Additionally, with a dry pattern favored for the central and southern plains, drought expansion is likely for these areas represented by the yellow shading. On the flip side, drought improvement or removal is likely for the northwest, parts of New England and the Mid-Atlantic, much of Hawaii, and parts of Puerto Rico. That's it from the Climate Prediction Center. Back to you, John.
All right, thanks so much, Scott. We will now take specific questions from the call participants. Please be sure to identify who you'd like to answer the question if possible. And Michelle, Could you please remind the call participants how they can ask a question, and then please queue up the first question?
Thank you. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, you may press star 1. To withdraw your questions, you may press star 2. Our first caller is Craig Miller. You may go ahead, sir.
Hi. Thanks for doing this, guys. I'm not sure who wants to take this, but I've been hearing talk of projections for some particularly brutal visitations by the polar vortex here in the Northeast and Great Lakes and Middle Atlantic region this winter. Can you shed any light on that? Is there any way to know how that's going to play out?
Yes, this is Scott Handel from the Climate Prediction Center. I could take this. So right now, the La Nina is very likely to happen this winter. As I mentioned before, probabilities are around 90% for this fall and greater than 50% for this winter. And this high likelihood of La Nina makes cold air outbreaks more likely across much of the northern tier of the contiguous United States, particularly for the northern plains and the northwest, as well as southern, southeastern parts of Alaska. In addition, model guidance is trending colder for these areas relative to last month, suggesting that cold air outbreaks could be more frequent or longer lasting during the winter months this year.
Okay. I have a second question if it's okay, or I can come back around and get in line again.
I think it's okay, Craig. I don't see any other questions in the queue right now.
Oh, okay. And that is, I know the Atlantic hurricane season was projected to be pretty active, and yet it seems like it's off to a really slow start, or am I just rushing the season? And if it is off to a slow start, what do you think is accounting for that? Is that another La Nina byproduct?
Hey, good morning. This is Scott Handel again. I could take this question. Yeah. Actually, this is not a La Nina byproduct. La Ninas actually tend to increase Atlantic hurricane activity. So we have had a slow start, but given the ongoing La Nina conditions, we're actually continuing, even despite the slow start, we're still favoring an above-normal season for the Atlantic. Right now, we're favoring about a 60% chance of an above-normal season, where a below-normal season still is only about 10%. It also should be noted that we're still well within the hurricane season, and you know, in September is a peak month, so we should still be vigilant and keep abreast of the latest forecast, since we still have a lot of the hurricane season left to go.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Thanks. And yeah, go ahead, please, Ira.
I was just going to say, climatologically speaking, putting it into historical perspective, for the Atlantic, there were no storms, as you mentioned, during the month of August, and according to our data records, this has happened only 3 times since 1950. The other 2 years were 1961 and 1997.
Interesting. And pardon my lapse there. I should have known that the projection for an active season was actually because of La Nina. I'm a little rusty on that.
Hey, no problem, Craig. And hey, this is John Bateman. I wanted to mention that when we're done with the Q&A, stick around because NOAA is doing its winter outlook media briefing next month, and I'll have the details on that for you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next caller is Rebecca Hersher. You may go ahead.
Hi. Thanks so much for doing this. I want to ask a follow-up about Atlantic hurricane season. Can you just say more about sort of what would be required for an above normal season to actually happen at this point? Like, in terms of preparedness, or we need to bring the right message to people, obviously. So would we see like a glut of storms quite late in the season in order to get to that threshold of above average?
Hey, good morning. This is Scott Handel. I could take this again. So generally there's two important requirements that you'd want to see for more activity. One is above normal sea surface temperature, which provides the fuel for the storms. Another is a reduction of what's called wind shear, which is a change of wind direction with height. And the reason why we still have to keep our guard up for the remainder of the hurricane season is La Niñas tend to reduce this wind shear, which gives the storms more opportunity to grow and less chance of being ripped apart by this change of wind direction with height. So what I can tell you right now is that we should still keep our guard up, continuing that we're still in this La Nina state, which tends to favor increased Atlantic hurricane activity.
Great. Thanks so much.
Thank you. And as a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, you may press star one. At this time, I'm showing no further questions. Again, that is star one if you would like to ask a question. I am showing no further questions.
All right. Well, thanks so much, Michelle. If we have no further questions, I will wrap up the call. First, I'd like to thank all of our speakers for their time and to everyone else for participating in this conference call. I will end by reminding you to mark your calendar for a few upcoming events. First, the release of the September 2022 U.S. Climate Report is scheduled for October 10th. The release of the September 2022 Global Climate Report is scheduled for October 14th. And in lieu of next month's media climate call, NOAA will host its 2022-23 U.S. Winter Outlook media briefing, and that will be on October 20th at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Again, that is the U.S. Winter Outlook media briefing on October 20th at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Lastly, an audio file of this call will be posted on the NOAA.gov media advisory site later today. And if you have any further informational needs, please feel free to email me and John Leslie. Our contact information is available at the top of the media advisory. Thank you.
And thank you. This concludes today's conference call. You may go ahead and disconnect at this time.